For as long as there's been teenagers, there's been teenage angst, moodiness, volatility, intense emotions. They're pretty much stock in trade for adolescents. But how do you know when your teenager is just being a teenager and when their moods are actually signs that they're struggling with something more serious? And how do you best support these teens? And what about help for their parents and teachers? Owen Kalacki is the Associate Director of Research at Origin. That's the National Centre of Excellence in Youth Mental Health. And Lisa Mackay-Brown is a lecturer in learning intervention at the Melbourne Graduate School of Education. Owen, Lisa, welcome.
Hello.
Hello, thank you.
Owen, you're a clinician with a focus on young people. Now, when we talk about mental health, why should we focus on the teenage years?
The teenage years are really important for mental health. It's the time in life when the greatest onset of mental health issues happen. We know that by the age of 14, 50% of the mental health issues that are going to happen have already begun to happen. And of course, it's an incredible developmental period when you're trying to get on and do an incredible number of important life things as well.
And as I said, with all those changes going on in your physical body as well.
Yeah, it's an immense time of change.
And this varies, really, I guess there's a spectrum from really quite mild to extreme.
There is. Mental health issues cover, like you said, the whole range of things from people being a little bit anxious about things or a bit depressed about things through to psychotic illnesses such as schizophrenia or bipolar, which might require medication or hospitalisation and things like that. So it's quite a range of things. And again, a little bit like physical health, which has a range of presentations from things that are not too severe, and if we get onto them early, we can do stuff about, through to things that we need much more major interventions for.
Yeah. Lisa, now your background is as a teacher, isn't it? So why is mental health for you an education issue, not just a medical issue?
I think because young people spend so much time at school, really, to start with. They're there, 5 days a week, 40 weeks a year at least. And so if they are feeling unwell and they're not coping mentally, then it makes school that much harder for them to manage. It makes it more difficult for them to engage socially with their peers. It can make it more difficult to engage in their schooling, to actually focus on what's happening. It can actually impact their ability to think about future goals and what perhaps they'd like to do after school. And so for all of those reasons, it's really important that firstly teachers have a sense and an understanding of what mental health is through both primary school and secondary school, but also really how they can work with allied health professionals to really support these young people who have been getting that additional health support.
Now, you taught for 25 years, Lisa. How did you see mental health problems disrupting learning?
I think for me, when I started teaching a long time ago, I was in rural Victoria, actually, working in very small schools. And I did see, challenging behaviours that I did not know how to handle or how to manage. I really didn't have many skills and found that the amount of time that I spent trying to work with these young people and try to get the classroom to be a safe space where we could all learn, really, it was impacting on what I could do as a teacher. And I'm not saying those young people all have mental health difficulties, because not all challenging behaviour.
Some are just naughty.
Yeah, some kids just are reacting to the environment around them for whatever reason. But I think, as a teacher, we are there for our students first. And if our students aren't coping in the classroom, then for us it's really important to try and find out what's going on so that, we can understand and we can find better ways to help them succeed, whatever that looks like in the education space.
Oh, and teenagers are, of course, known to be moody. How do parents know when their child is sort of displaying behaviour that goes beyond that the usual teenage angst? What are you looking for?
Exactly right. Teenagers can be moody. Things are very intense for them. But really what you're looking for is changes from normal. So if you know your child, that they might be a bit moody, or they might get a bit angry about things from time to time. But that tends to pass relatively quickly, and we wouldn't expect for that to persist for more than a few days. So if there's changes that persist for more than probably a week, I think we should take a relatively low threshold for this, but more than a week, it's probably time to begin to think about whether something's going on. So these could be changes in mood, changes in performance in school, sleep and appetite and other things like that. So those are the sort of things that you'd be wanting to look at.
And do you advise to err on the side of caution?
I do, very definitely. I think, we're so used to in physical health, thinking about, a stitch in time saves nine, and it's exactly the same in mental health as well. The earlier we can get something checked out, the lesser kind of interventions we need to help with it. And maybe in many cases, it might just be teaching people some relatively simple strategies to deal with things rather than actually having to think about therapies or medications.
Okay, so what should parents do if they do notice some of those signs you've talked about, longer term anxiety, changes in their schoolwork, sleeplessness, loss of appetite, any of those things?
Those sort of things. Mm. I think the first thing is to, when those things aren't happening, is to be maintaining as good a relationship with your teenager as you can.
easier said than done, mind you.
Easier said than done, but because that creates an environment where communication is more possible and it's easier for you to ask them what's going on and check that out in their lives. That they come to you and they talk about something going on, it might be time then to go to a GP or to somewhere like a Headspace Centre to sort of begin to get somebody to have a bit of a chat to the young person as well. If they have it available through their school, maybe through the school counsellor or someone else would be another kind of option to go and have somebody to have a bit of a chat to the young person and find out if there is a bit more going on.
This is Life Matters. I'm Amanda Smith with teenage mental health experts Owen Kalacki from Origin and Lisa Mackay-Brown, who's a lecturer in learning intervention. And if you've had or have a teenager in your life who's experienced anxiety or depression beyond that usual sort of teenage angst, it would be very interesting to hear from you if you'd care to share your thoughts. There's the Life Matters Facebook page and there's the SMS 0418 226576. Now, Lisa Mackay-Brown, are there school events that can be triggers, that can exacerbate anxiety and depression beyond a manageable level in teens?
I think depending on what is happening for the young person, there are certain things that can increase the level of anxiousness that they do have at school. So for some students, the idea of having to do an oral presentation in front of the class or actually
yes,
just
public
being asked,
speaking, yeah, it's terrifying.
It's terrifying. Being asked a question without warning in front of their peers and worried about what that might look like. Even who do I sit with at lunchtime can be a really big battle for some young people who aren't sure where they fit in the social mores, I guess, of the school. So there are things like that we find we need to be aware of. If a young person does have anxiety or depression or some other form of mental illness, it's about understanding what that means, liaising with their mental health professionals, and then coming up with strategies that support that young person in the space. So some children and young people even need the opportunity to leave the classroom space and go somewhere safe, use some of the coping skills that they've been taught by their clinicians before coming back in and joining the class. So individualised strategies to some extent, but there's also some general classroom things that we as teachers can do to provide a really safe and supportive environment for our kids.
Well, you talked earlier about your own experience as a teacher and, a lack of knowledge really about how to deal with some of these things. At the moment, how well do you reckon schools are handling this sort of stuff?
I think schools have a really strong awareness of the needs of young people, particularly their mental health needs, because it is such a concern for teachers and wellbeing staff in schools. So I think schools are very focused on trying to create safe and supportive environments. They're also looking a lot more closely at things like social emotional learning curriculum. We know that building resilience is really important in young people, and we know that school can be a very strong protective factor for young people. So it's about having those programs in place that young people can access. Occasionally too, young people might need some smaller group programs, such as social skills programs or coping skills programs. And some schools are starting to look at how they can provide those sorts of additional supports as well.
Oh, and what could schools be doing better, though? That all sounds pretty hunky-dory, actually, like it's all, you know, sorted.
And look, I think, as Lisa said, increasingly schools are aware of these things. I think being more aware of some of these early signs and symptoms, I think one of the things that we've tended to see a lot over the years are young people who've come to our clinical service who spent a long time being identified as kind of the naughty kids.
Yeah.
And what was being missed was what that behaviour was actually really being triggered by. And again, because it took longer to get into help, the problem required more intervention then to sort of deal with. But also there's educational opportunities that have been missed for that young person while that's been happening.
Yeah.
I think in the worst case, of course, is that young people who are in that situation become alienated from their education and it becomes a kind of a difficult place for them to re-engage with later.
Now, Lisa, you've worked with students with mild anxiety, but also some whose anxiety is actually so severe that they struggle to go to school at all. And they're what's called school refusers. Tell us about the program that you've been working with those school refusers.
Yeah. So my last school position was at a school called Travancore School, which is a mental health focused special education setting that works with Royal Children's Hospital mental health and also with Origin Youth Health, where
I
was from.
Travancore's in Melbourne.
Travancore's in Melbourne, yep. Yeah. And we were noticing when I was an outreach teacher there that the number of young people being referred by clinicians to us for not being at school was increasing, and it increased threefold over about a 3 to 4 year period. So we decided that we needed to look at some sort of intervention for re-engagement, and that's where the program Into School came from. So we're looking at young people who are clients of Royal Children's Hospital Mental Health who have anxiety and depression who aren't attending
school.
They've already
been identified as having a problem.
Yep.
And they're not going to school.
And so they are referred into school, which is a three-phase program. What I think is different about Into School is firstly we have a transitional classroom. And so the young people gradually get integrated into this transitional classroom, no more than 8 young people.
So it's sort of still like going to school.
Yeah, because one of the things they've lost is their routine of going to school, you know, sleeping overnight, getting up in the morning, getting dressed, having breakfast, those sort of things. So we need to build that back into their processes. But we have a teacher and clinician working in partnership with the young people. So the clinician works with the young people on individual therapy and does family work as well with the parents. Our teacher does the classroom-based work, but our clinician also works in the classroom. So she does things like social skills work with them in situ, in the space where the anxiety is occurring for them. She does coping skills with them. We take them out and about once a week into the community so that they start to learn how to use things like public transport, how to order things at restaurants, you know, how to go ice skating, you know. So it's a gradual, I guess, what we call a functional recovery or reintegration back into the school and the wider community.
All right. So now you've had 3 intakes so far. The third group is now just about to go back to school. And for Life Matters, Michael McKenzie went along to meet 2 of the latest graduates of this program.
Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Well, can I get even closer? I know that's weird because you've just met me, but it makes it easier for me to do that. Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, so
I'm sitting in a specially designed classroom with 2 of the students who have found it impossible to return to school. We're calling them Emma and Kate, and sitting in the circle with us are their mothers as well, Wendy and Mandy. And the fact that Emma and Kate are willing to talk at all is testament to their quiet determination to get their story out, and also the intensive return to school program that's one of a kind in this country. Emma is 14 years old. She hasn't been at school since August last year. And she tells me why it all became too much.
I stopped going for a couple of months. Yeah, I refused to go. All the bullying that I was going through and depression and all that. Yeah.
Did you just suddenly wake up one day and go, you know what, today is a day I'm staying home?
Yeah, I went to school and then that day it was just horrible and I didn't ever go back.
Did you ever talk about the bullying with teachers at school?
I tried, but they didn't really listen.
Really?
Yeah, they didn't really, like, do much about it. They just say, stay away from each other.
Which is often really hard to do. Wendy, as Emma's mother, when Emma first said, look, I don't want to go to school today, what did you think about that?
Well, I just said, come on, you've got to go to school. I know she was having a difficult time, and I said, you've got to go to school. I end up taking her to a psychologist, and she spoke to the psychologist, and she put us on to Travancore, and this is where we've seen Leah and the psychiatrist and that, and they referred us to this school to come to this program, and like it just helped us so much.
So you entered the program, and tell us what happened.
Well, at first I was really nervous because I didn't know anyone and I wasn't sure if it was going to help me or not. But then I got to know everyone and I made a best friend out of it.
And that's Kate. We're calling her Kate, sitting next to you here. Yeah.
Yeah, and she also helped me through a lot of difficult times and all that.
Kate, hello. Having listened to Emma's story, and I'm sure you've spoken together a lot as friends, did you go through the kind of the same experience?
Not really. It was a bit different. I was having a lot of drama at school with friends, and that made me really uncomfortable. But then there was more stuff going on at home, so that's what made it difficult to be at school.
Yeah. So you had friends at school, but you had some issues with these friends, did you?
Yeah. They were... They used to always cause arguments for no reason, and because there was three of us, one of us would always get pushed out, and this one girl just liked to cause arguments with me for no reason, and it just made me really mad, so I couldn't focus on my schoolwork.
Right, and she was supposed to be one of your closest friends.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah.
You had that happening then, and then you had stuff at home. Do you mind me asking about home?
My brother was really unwell. And there was just a lot of arguments at home, and I felt quite alone during that time. I moved in with my dad for a little bit to see if that would make things easier. But yeah,
did that work out?
Not really. I felt more alone.
Really?
Yeah. I got away from the arguing, but that was about it.
So with Emma, she just said, look, it was the bullying, and what was it for you? What was that moment when you thought, no, this is enough?
I kept having anxiety at school. I couldn't be in the classroom. I was constantly upset, and I wasn't getting support at school. My mum had to coach me. I used to text her and tell her what was going on, and she would, like, tell me, like, you can get through it and you can stay at school, but then it just got too hard.
Mandy, what were some of the texts you used to get from Kate when she texted you at school?
That she didn't know where to go or what to do, and we'd had conversations with the staff at the school, and everything sounded really good at the table, but then it wasn't followed through with and things like that. So I was just trying to encourage her to do their breathing and ask to be removed from the classroom for 10 minutes and things like that. And she would follow my direction. And sometimes she'd make it through the day, and other days I'd have to go and pick her up. Right. So
the school talked like good game, but it didn't necessarily translate to being fantastic on the ground.
No, and then Kate started coming here.
Was it like being at school but with a smaller group?
Not really for me. Like, I just felt happier, and it just had a nice vibe to it, because at school our classrooms are just grey and it didn't have like any colours or anything.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, and like here it had colours, and you got to like write on the windows, and and we'd have like a weekly session with Leah, and we'd talk to her.
Leah's the clinician?
Yeah.
Right.
And then we'd like go back in the classroom, and we, like, you're surrounded with people that have gone through like the same kind of thing, so you don't feel really alone. You feel a bit like freer, like you're not so like weighed down. It didn't feel like prison.
Like others who've taken part in this new way to bring students back to school, Emma and Kate went from one-on-one sessions with their program teacher in a classroom to full-time, 4 days a week. They worked on independent learning projects, social skills, coping skills, literacy, numeracy, art, and physical education.
When young people start this program, often they're feeling quite helpless and hopeless about what could be different, and they're not really foreseeing a school future, at the very least, that could be different.
Leah has worked as a clinician with all three intakes during the program, and she's in the room with Emma and Kate.
And I think for both of them, I've seen them make some really huge changes in terms of their ability to tackle the hard stuff and to put themselves forward and put themselves out there to try new things.
All the students spend one day every week engaged in out and about with teachers. They're connecting with the community.
From kids that were sort of really low in mood and very anxious to kids that are spending sleepovers with one another on the holidays. So it's been wonderful.
Is that something that you've seen across the board?
I think, yeah, the three cohorts, all of them, I start and I, you know, I get a little bit nervous about will there be change and will I be able to help them through their difficult times. And at every graduation, I just sit back and think, wow, look at what they've done, look at how far they've come. So consistently, I think, in every group we've had, there's been huge successes.
Emma, it's important to recognise that when you're going through that anxiety, leaving the house, even going to a program that's so supportive, can be difficult.
Yeah, there were times that I refused to even come to the program.
I'm not going. And I said, come on. And so I've messaged Leah. Leah messaged me back. She goes, okay, Wendy, tell her I'll be there in half an hour.
She actually came to my house. She drove all the way from the city to where I live.
And there's a knock at the door half an hour later, and there's Leah. God love her.
When she came, I was still in bed, and but she drove me to school.
And, you know, she said, come on, Emma, get out of bed. And she hopped up and she looked at Leah and she thought, she means business.
You know, but she did help. Like, it was good that she actually came and got me to school.
Off she went and looked at me and gave me a bit of a greasy on the way when she was taken off. But, you know, it was all good in the end. And
why did it help?
Because I was away for a couple of days, like, on and off throughout the program, and I did miss some good sessions and strategies, and yeah, so every day counts.
To drive from the city, you know, 50 kilometres away to come and get a child to go to school, I think that's fantastic. Good on you, Leah.
Is it really important for you to have Leah in the classrooms when you begin at the new school?
Yeah. Yeah,
When we start talking about returning to school this year, the mood changes. Emma is clearly apprehensive, but she's decided to start afresh at a new school where they also offer on-site training in hairdressing. Her mother Wendy's really happy with Emma's decision, and Mandy is happy as well because Kate has decided to stay at the school where she's felt so much anxiety.
I was trying to stay in contact with the kids at school, so when I did go back, there wasn't awkwardness.
Mm.
That sort of worked.
Sort of worked? How do you mean?
They kind of avoided me for a while, and they got mad at me because I just suddenly stopped going to school. So I felt like I wasn't supported by the girls, but I do have guy mates in my class and they were a lot more supportive than the girls I hang around with.
These were some of the male friends you'd made at school?
Yeah, it was. They would check in with me and make sure that I was feeling okay that day, and they put in a lot of effort to make plans with me outside of school so that I was still seeing people.
Are you worried that the friends you've still got at that school will put the same pressures on you that was worrying you this last year?
It can happen. I have changed my mindset on it. I am not in as many classes with them as I would have been last year, which is good, so I get a break. I'm just not going to let it drag me down because I have goals and I'm going to get there. Don't give up in trying to get the help that you need. Someone is going to listen and, yeah, you will get there.
Kate, there's going to be people listening to this conversation who, rightly or wrongly, think you guys are just shirkers, that you guys are just trying to avoid school because you can't be bothered going and you're lazy and all that kind of stuff. What would you say to them?
Well, they're not in our shoes, are they? They don't understand what we've been going through. Yes, there are kids out there who just can't be bothered with school because it doesn't interest them. But we have actually tried this program so we can get back to school, as school does mean something to us and we do want to learn. We were just having some trouble along the way and we got the support that we needed, so now we can do it.
And Kate is planning on studying midwifery once she finishes school. And a big thank you to her and Emma and their mothers Wendy and Mandy for allowing Life Matters' Michael McKenzie inside their lives for this story. Well, here in Life Matters, back to Lisa Mackay-Brown, who lectures in learning intervention at the Melbourne Graduate School of Education. Lisa, is this School Refuses program an ongoing program? We've had three intakes. Does it continue?
At this point, no, not past the end of February once we've got these young people back to school. We were funded philanthropically, but we're looking for additional funding to keep going because we've had incredible outcomes with the young people in getting them back to school and keeping them back to school.
Right, okay. Oh, well, that's sort of, it's good to learn that it's worked, but it's a bit sad to learn that it's teetering on the edge at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, we're working on it. We're working on it.
Good on you. Good on you. Owen Kalacki from Origin. A lot of parents listening to this won't have kids with symptoms as severe as Kate or Emma or as we've been talking about. They may, though, notice some warning signs that you've mentioned. They also may, though, be concerned there's too much of a kind of medicalisation of young people. Is that a fair concern?
One of the great concerns, I think, around mental health in general is that we still have an incredible amount of stigma attached to the labels that go with it, whether it's anxiety or depression or other labels. What I would say is that stigma is actually something which prevents people getting help early, and it's far, far better to go and get help, to find out if you need help, than to sort of hope that there's nothing and ignore it, because what we know, as in physical health, the earlier you get onto something, the easier it is to deal with and the less harm that it causes. So I understand the stigma that's there. And it's interesting, just reflecting on the funding difficulties, I think one of the things that comes up again and again in mental health is this stigma, I think, drives some of that funding difficulty that we have as well. But to not let people allow that stigma to get in the way of seeking help as early as possible and getting the easiest and best help.
Yeah, well, that's the clear message, as early as possible. Owen Kalacki is the Associate Director of Research at Origin. That's the National Centre of Excellence in Youth Mental Health. And Lisa Mackay-Brown is a lecturer in learning intervention at the Melbourne Graduate School of Education. And you've both written up your advice for parents and teachers wanting to know how to help teenagers and their mental health. And that will be on the Life Matters website to read. Owen and Lisa, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda.
On RN, you're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith.